Chapter 7 Healing Through the Sanctifying Seven Spirit. As an introduction to our continued discussions about the 13th book of the Corpus Hermeticum, we would like to quote verses 4 to 8. In beings devoid of reason, the soul cooperates with each one's natural disposition. In men, however, it works against this disposition. Every soul that has entered a body is tormented by pain and lust, since, in this dense body, pain and lust course like a blaze into which the soul is plunged and in which it is drowned. Whenever the spirit can give guidance to such souls, it causes its light to go out to them and opposes their inclinations. Just as a good physician cauterizes or cuts away what is diseased in the body, so the spirit inflicts suffering on the soul by leading it away from lust, which is the cause of its diseased state. But the great disease of the soul is its denial of God, with the resulting erroneous thinking which gives rise to all evils, and certainly nothing good. That is why the spirit, by combating this disease, imparts the good to the soul once more, just as the physician restores health to the body. But human souls that do not allow themselves to be guided by the spirit find themselves in the same condition as the souls of animals devoid of reason. We would like to add what the third verse states with such emphasis. In beings devoid of reason, the soul is nature. So the creature devoid of reason possesses a soul entirely to be explained by nature. Consequently, this animal creature cannot do otherwise than be totally one with nature, completely in harmony with it. It is quite content to be so, for that is the aim of its existence. Nature and the creature's inner disposition are in perfect equilibrium. Many people are like this, people who are entirely wrapped up in nature and completely attuned to it, who even pride themselves on being like this and have chosen such an attitude to life as a sort of religion. Just think of the many kinds of nature worshippers and of the gluttonous hordes bent wholly on matter and the gratification of the senses. Nature dissolves unceasingly, as the universal doctrine explains. It is not a reality. As soon as one tries to hold on to it, antitheses come into play. So nature as we know it is unreal, dialectical, and everything bound to nature and dependent on it is equally unreal. Nature is, or at least ought to be, a clear mirror of the imagination, imparting to us the images of goodness, beauty, and love. The image, however, fades into its opposite in accordance with the laws of nature. We have drawn your attention to this many times, but not to change the attitude of someone who is entirely one with nature. That would be pointless, for in beings devoid of reason, the soul is completely in harmony with nature. But in the true, original, and thus fundamental disposition of mankind, or at least in the case of very many people, there is a powerful element that turns completely away from nature. It is to awaken and strengthen that element that the universal doctrine speaks repeatedly of what is fading of dialectics and shows how unintelligent it is to hang on to it. And when, in pursuit of this delusion, people discover their inability to grasp it, then the school speaks to them of dialectics. It is impossible to deny nature and its delusion, for the human being, your nature-born personality, is part of the nature of antitheses. Your personality is born of it, derives its sustenance from it, and in the end, its death is caused by it. But what man, or at least a part of mankind, has is a soul which is not to be explained from this nature. The microcosm of such entities has a nucleus, the central heart of the microcosm. This nucleus, this rose, is linked to a certain extent to the nature-born heart and speaks within it. When this nucleus speaks to you and within you, then once again the state of the soul sets itself against everything transitory, and the individual will then rebel desperately against unreality, so that he is incited to do all sorts of strange things. Throughout the ages, there have been many who were amazed about the fact that on the one hand there can be such a thing as a soul exempt from nature. The soul we know as the rose or primordial atom, while on the other hand, that same person can prove to be so closely bound to nature. The cause of this is explained by Hermes. Every soul that has entered a body and thus is locked within the nature-born personality is tormented by pain and lust, since in the densified body, pain and lust course like a blaze into which the soul is plunged and in which it is drowned. Certain mysteries are connected with all this. Ideally, the human figure ought to be the instrument of the indwelling living soul, but in its crystallized form as we know it, it is not suitable for that. Seen from the soul's point of view, the human being received this figure from nature, from his father and mother. For this reason, it possesses characteristics which are powerfully destructive to the soul. Or at least, the soul is taken prisoner by them. We discover these soul-destroying characteristics, among others, in the vital currents associated with the physical form, the nerve ether, the archeus, or, as Jacob Bohm calls it, the evil salniter. In this life essence, in these vital currents, the soul is drowned. The influences of this archeus cannot be neutralized with the aid of medicines, if only that were possible. Neither can these vital fluids be removed surgically or by any other means. No, the archeus or evil salniter must be neutralized from within. To achieve this, you will need to engage in a life struggle. If you are to carry through this process, the first necessity is, of course, to possess a soul which rebels against its afflictions, against its experiences, not in a negative sense against the world, mankind and society, or against one's fellow human beings. You will need to offer resistance to the evil in your own system, which means to resist the sorrow and lust that are the very substance of the salniter in you. You know sorrow. Its aspects, so many and varied, are experienced by every human being. As far as lust is concerned, you need to bear in mind that in former times this word did not have the unfavorable connotations it has now. The meaning Hermetic philosophy attaches to this word can best be described as a state in which all sensory activity is directed towards nature and towards all the results of such directedness. Now, when the soul begins to rebel against all this because the cup of experience has become full, then this shows that the primordial atom, the nucleus, is beginning to exercise a powerful influence on the consciousness located in the heart sanctuary. This is especially the case when a particularly bitter experience has to be endured. One's entire state will react powerfully to such a situation. And as Hermes says, through such a burning of the soul, a glow, a light, a radiance comes into being. This radiance of the soul is, of course, totally unnatural. It can certainly not be explained by the ordinary state of nature, for it comes from the central heart of the microcosm. Well then, as Hermes says, this glow, this radiance, this influence sets itself against the evil in you. We say the soul enters, or at least can enter, into a new state of being, a state which can lead to a total change, a total rebirth of the soul. The radiance of the soul challenges the evil salniter, the nerve ether, directly, without the need for any roundabout methods. It acts like a powerful surgeon who cauterizes or cuts away from the body whatever is diseased. Why? For the sake of the soul's health and that of the body. Not dialectical health, but true health, in the sense of the universal gnosis, see the health that is a going forward on the path to fulfillment of the aim of life. Why do you possess a body? Is it so that you can kick your heels here for a few years, going through trouble and strife of every possible variety, and to pursue some career in society, to keep your head above water, only to die in the end, and so that you can spend all those years just drowning in your nerve ether, in evil, just fighting and struggling? Is that the aim of your life? Why do you possess a body? The bodily form, says Hermes, is an instrument, an attribute of the soul, intended to be able to enter into the service of the soul as a handmaiden of the soul. So there is a state of soul which exists entirely in the bondage of nature and which functions in cohesion with the nerve ether. But there is also a state in which the pure, original human soul opposes the dictatorship and domination exercised upon it by the body. Imagine that a child is born, a child endowed with an original soul. When this soul becomes linked with the body, it encounters the evil associated with dialectical nature. Now the question is, when this child develops and grows older and has to accept life, will it combat the evil present within itself, or will it simply accept the evil and allow itself to follow the lines of least resistance? As a soul entity, you undergo the dictatorship of the physical human being, as a result of which the soul is threatened with extermination, with drowning. For, as the Bible says, the soul that sins must die. That special state of being which dares to join battle against nature arises when the spirit can give guidance to such souls, as Hermes puts it. We speak of a new soul state from which a light, a luminescence, a radiance emanates, and which acts in the nerve fluid as a medicine, causing a great deal of pain with its purifying fire. Man has received this soul state as an aid, and if you, reader, know this state, you will be kept constantly in motion by the pain of its medicine. Every day, something else will happen in the great soul struggle. You will not be left in peace for a second. Each moment will bring a new impulse to undergo the purifying process of cutting and burning, until the soul discovers that the great disease of the soul is the denial of God. Generally speaking, people tend to conduct this struggle on a much lower level, battling against pain and sorrow as they are suffered in the body, until the soul discovers that the great sin, the great disease of the soul, is the denial of God and all the erroneous thinking which results from it. If, in its daily struggle against the evil Salnita, the soul's attention remains focused purely on what it suffers in the body, it will eventually become exhausted. But the soul ought instead to wait for the spirit, full of yearning for salvation, as the Bible so frequently states. Think, for instance, of the poet of the Psalms who said, "As a heart thirsts for flowing streams, so my soul thirsts for you, O God." The body, called to become the instrument, the tool or attribute of the spirit soul, as Hermes sometimes calls it, remains in its state of imprisonment in nature as long as the spirit itself has not descended into it, no matter how fervent the soul's entreaties. In previous discussions, we prepared you for this important subject by drawing your attention to the pineal center. The nature-bound human being will remain in his state of imprisonment in nature as long as the spirit has not descended into it. Now you might ask, what use then is the radiance of the soul? However fervent the appeals of the soul power, the soul light, against its imprisonment, what use will it be without the spirit? The radiance of the soul has a twofold benefit. Firstly, the system is prevented from sinking and drowning any further in the night of downward development by the radiance of the soul, active in the evil Salnita, although without the link with the spirit, the soul will die just like the body. True, there cannot be any question of a standstill, and there is only either rising or falling ever deeper, yet even so, the radiance of the soul is capable of holding back the further submergence of the human being for a certain amount of time, sometimes for a long time. In this sense, the radiance of the soul is like a piece of cork upon which the human being can remain drifting on the sea of life for a certain length of time. So further falling is delayed by the rebirth of the soul. This is a very important point that needs to be considered very carefully in the sevenfold body of the spiritual school. After the decease of those who have been, as it were, suspended in the radiance of the soul, it is often possible for them to be kept in the life field we call the golden head, so that from there an attempt can be made to guide them further into the liberating life. Nevertheless, the slowing down of the fall through soul power is not at all the same as being saved, not at all the same as genuine rising, a real redemption and ascent to one's true destiny. Soul rebirth is not transfiguration either, and transfiguration is the goal of the modern spiritual school. The spiritual school of the tri-unity of the light aims at transfiguration, at the genesis of the new man. So, as a pupil of this school, you may not content yourself with the first benefit, with the new soul state, with the cork on which you can keep yourself afloat for a while, for the new soul possesses a second ability. Once it has entered the state of rebirth, the stage of the new soul state, it is capable of invoking and actualizing the descent of the spirit into the pineal center. As a heart pants for flowing streams, so my soul thirsts for you, O God, for the living God. When the soul raises itself in this way, the spirit will descend into the prepared pineal center in the brain. Then the seven spirit itself will affect the nerve ether with its sanctifying power in an absolutely liberating way. It is that spirit for which we wait in our school. May that spirit touch you in totality.